Special Committee Fisheries to order at approximately 10:18. We would ask that the members turn off their cell phones. Before us, we have House Bill 344. For the record, Representative Munoz, Representative Booth, Vice Chair Keller, myself, the co-chair, Edmund.
I think she's in protective rooms.
We're going to pause for a moment for those online. Obviously, we are apparently having some technical difficulties with the sound system, and maybe we aren't back projecting.
Maybe we haven't started yet. We just thought we did.
Hanging in there.
Okay, so apparently we have our audio intact. Once again, this is the House Special Committee on Fisheries. We are hearing House Bill 344 today, a bill to extend the sunset of the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit. And we're looking forward in the very short time that we have today to hear as much about the bill as we possibly can. And we'll ask the bill sponsor staff to please come to the table. And while I'm doing that, I'd like the record to reflect that both Representative Johnson and Millett are excused today. And with that, Pete, would you introduce yourself, please, and provide an overview of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peter Eklund, staff to Representative Thomas, the sponsor of the bill. Representative Thomas apologizes for not being able to be here today in person, so he sent me. HB 344 proposes to extend the Salmon Product Development Tax Credit. And that credit is an incentive to add value to salmon in Alaska. The concept originated with the Salmon Industry Task Force in 2003. And a bill came forward, and legislation was passed then. At that time, market conditions were very poor. There was a lot of farm salmon competing with our salmon, and the industry was kind of at a low point. Processors can claim a credit of up to 50% of the cost of a qualified investment on their fisheries business tax. Fisheries business tax is applied to the ex vessel value of salmon. The types of qualified investments include fillet machines, pinbow machines, glazing, smoking equipment, row equipment, etc. The qualified investment must be new, it must be predominantly for salmon, and it must be used for value-added products. Since the program was enacted, there have been some positive trends. There's less product going into traditional large cans, there's more product being filleted, there's increasing product diversity. The average value of our salmon products is increasing. The state revenues from the fisheries business tax is increasing. And also permit values in many of the fisheries are increasing. Under current law, the credit expires on December 31st of FY11. This bill contemplates extending that program another 4 years to 2015. The sponsor believes that this is a good time to extend that credit to allow the industry to plan for the future and their future investments. And this credit, we believe, plays a critical part in helping the industry to retool and to modernize. Again, the sponsor strongly believes in renewing this program. It's an investment in the health of our economy. Challenges remain, and the salmon industry and our industry is not out of the woods yet, but things are getting better. And even though things are getting better, there still are challenges. Since this program was first put into place, energy costs have risen dramatically. They've fluctuated in the last few years, but energy prices are certainly up. Further investments are needed to continue to modernize, and the global seafood market is as competitive, if not more competitive than ever. So. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions I can, and I know that the Department of Revenue is here for tax questions and so forth. I would point out, I think in your packet there is just a page from the Department of Revenue's annual report. It looks something like this. I think it's in your packet. And I would just point out that in 2009, the total tax collected from fisheries business tax was $42,151,000. Back in, just for reference, back in 2002, it was $24,363,000. in '03, it was $23,285,000. So it's grown quite a bit. Even I think this credit's not the complete reason for that growth in the value of our salmon products, but it's a component of that. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pete, before we go to a question from Representative Book, can you address the sponsor's intent with this bill in the sense that obviously the bill was introduced to extend the sunset of the tax credit? I think that's the primary intent of Representative Thomas. But I think there is interest as well as maybe taking a look at the program itself and maybe adding one or two more components to it. But can you speak a little bit to what the sponsor's desire is?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The sponsor was approached with adding perhaps like ice machines into this tax credit. And his first reaction was no. Since then, he's kind of softened and he's contemplating perhaps that maybe that would be a good idea, but I don't think he's ready to add that in at this point. But I think he's probably well on his way of perhaps going down that road.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Booth.
Thank you, Chairman Hanson. Actually, I was going to dovetail off of that. You do have Mr. Eklund, legislative edit, a prepared for Department of Revenue-Tax Division sheet here, and you have a list. One's qualified expenditures and the other one's non-qualified. Was there, in the original adoption of this legislation, the discussion to exclude or include these particular items? I assume the reasons for these things were developed on both sides of industry regarding the state. And could you speak to that about how that came place and why some are included and excluded?
Through the chair, Representative Book, I was not personally involved in the passing of the first legislation in 2003. It's been amended twice. There's been two subsequent extensions and modifications of the original bill, the original legislation. So, and I haven't read through all of the history of the debate, but I'm sure the qualified expenditures you see in law, I'm sure were debated in committee quite vigorously, I would assume.
And Representative Book, I think that's a very pertinent question, and it's not the chair's intent, obviously, to move the bill out today. We've got about 20 more minutes left before we need to call it a day and move to the floor. We will get to the department here to respond specifically to that question, but I want to get a couple of folks to testify on this bill today, and assuming that there aren't any additional questions for the bill sponsor staff. Pete, thank you, and
thank you.
Ask if you could just sort of stay close by in
sure.
case we have additional questions. I'm going to ask Greg Fisk, would you come up, please, and offer your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Greg Fisk. I'm here today representing Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. BBEDC strongly supports passage of HB 344 and the renewal and extension of the tax credit. It's helped stimulate investment in new value-added processing equipment across the strait as a state, and probably most important are the many salmon filleting lines that are now operating. In Bristol Bay, the increased filleting production is in the process of truly transforming the fishery. Unfortunately, basic salmon quality issues continue to limit the full positive economic impact of these value-added investments. It's most acute in Bristol Bay, but it's certainly not limited to Bristol Bay by any means. It's an old problem. It's just a lack of chilling capacity, and the result is too high an incidence of number two quality fish. And number twos really aren't acceptable for filleting. The big problem is flesh gaping and bruising. Increasing the percentage of number ones is vital to getting the full economic benefit of these other investments that the industry has been making under this tax credit. And proper slush ice chilling of fish has been demonstrated in Bristol Bay to increase the percentage of number ones from around 45 to 50% of the fish landed to up to 80-85%. So it's a big change. Accordingly, BBEDC would like to suggest that as HB 344 works its way through the process, you consider the question of adding ice-making equipment to the mix of eligible investments under the tax credit. We fully recognize that this is a delicate process when you're moving a bill along like this, and there's a lot of question around tax credits these days generally, but this is one that we think would contribute directly to the original intent of this bill, and is not too large an extension. So we're not suggesting amendment language today. We understand that you've been dealing with the bill sponsors to consider when or if that might be appropriate, but we wanted to just frame this issue for you. And I'll just end my remarks at that, because I know you're on a tight schedule and have a major appointment with Senator Murkowski soon. So if anybody has any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Greg. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Is there reference to the list in the bill, or how is the list compiled? Is that done in the department, or?
Representative Munoz, I think it might be appropriate to have someone from the Department of Revenue, whom we do have online, to that dovetails with the Representative Book's earlier question. And if there aren't any specific questions for Mr. Fisk, I'm going to ask the department to respond to that if they could. Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering why, if this is important, why wasn't the emphasis put on it initially or during the previous amendments to this legislation? I mean, what has come to the fore recently? I mean, prior to the distribution of this legislation, I mean, we're in the 11th hour here, so.
Well, representative for the
Greg,
sponsor.
Could you,
excuse
Mr.
me,
Mr. Fisk? Let me just. That would help the recording secretary if we just identify you.
Yeah, Greg Fisk, through the chair. Representative Vick, I think that what's changed here is that when this bill was passed, I believe was
2003.
We were in the depths of salmon crisis at the time. And I think that the emphasis at the time was simply to, you know, try to get people started looking at value-added processing. And I think it's been very effective in doing that. And what we're running into now, though, is just the question of how do you get now full advantage of these investments that have been, some of which have already been made. And if you don't have the quality of fish to go through the lines, then you're running into a problem. This alone is not going to solve that problem. I think there's a lot of elements to the whole question of making sure that all fish are properly chilled, but it will be an incentive to industry, and I think industry has responded to state intent in the past in a positive way with investments in filleting equipment and so forth, and we think that perhaps adding this might send the same message that this is really important.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Fisk, for coming forward.
Thank you.
Tim Cottingen, Tim, if you're online with the Department of Revenue, can you address in a somewhat brief manner the rationale for the qualified and the non-qualifying expenditures under the program as it stands today?
Representative Brown, I am here.
You're here in person.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Tim Cottingen. I'm a FIS Tax and Licensing Group for the Department of Revenue. And I'm sorry, could you restate the question?
We have a list, Mr. Cottingen, of the qualified and the non-qualified expenditures that were under the program today. So if you could somewhat, in a brief manner, talk about the origins of those lists and respond to Representative Book's question.
Mr. Chair, that has resulted from the language in the statute itself, which describes the qualifying functions that are allowed for this type of equipment under the credit program. If you were to look at specific provision is under 4375035J3, describes what a qualified investment is, and it requires that the investment is a significant component that's predominantly used to perform processing, packaging, or product finishing functions. And then down below that, the provisions describe what does not qualify. And so it was from these provisions and obviously some interpretations of these provisions that's allowed us to create this list.
Okay. Representative Book, additional questions along those lines?
Nope. Thank you very much.
Representative Munoz?
Well, it looks like with this language that icing is permissible, is it not? I mean, it could be interpreted that way.
Through the chair.
Preserving PAC, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Through the chair, I'm sorry.
Mr. Cottingen.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. One of the magic words is processing function. And icing under the Department of Revenue statutes is not a processing function. So therefore, because it's simply icing, which is something that fishermen can do and not be considered processors, which we wouldn't want them to be, it's not been a qualified item of equipment under this program.
Representative Munoz, any additional questions?
Well, I would disagree with that interpretation. And I think in the inclusionary language, you have blast freezing, preserving. Of course, icing is a method of preserving. And then the exclusionary language is more, you know, knives, gloves, tools, ancillary products. So I think in this language, it seems that there is the ability to include ice machines, but, you know, I think obviously the interpretation's very narrow. Thank you.
And I think that's the interpretation that the department has made, and that's where we stand today. And as the bill sponsor staff mentioned, Representative Thomas is perhaps interested in reviewing that by way of some changes in statutory language. Mr. Cottingen, if you wouldn't mind just sitting there for now, I'd like to go to public testimony or continue. I'd like to open public testimony at this point and ask Mark Palmer, Ocean Beauty Seafoods. Mark, if you're online, if you could identify yourself and offer your comments, please.
Yes, Mark Palmer, President of Ocean Beauty Seafoods. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to expand, and again, I'm not going to try and focus specifically on one fishery, but I do think the Bristol Bay fishery really shows the importance of this bill and how it's worked. You know, we did back in 2003, the industry was at a low, but there's been a tremendous investment across the bay in fillet machines, which has increased the need for higher quality fish and more of it. That's facilitated icing and bleeding premiums to the fishermen. Last year, over 30 million more pounds of fish was purchased that was iced and bled to support these fillet operations, which increased revenue to fishermen, which gave us the ability to generate more value-added product. But it's not only that. You know, we have capacity issues in the bay when we get the peak of the run. And if your freezing capacity is the limitation of a lot of the facilities, you can only get so many pounds through these freezers. But when you're filleting the fish, you can get 30 to 40% more pounds through your freezer without any additional capacity. So, you know, it's cheaper to put a bigger RSW tank out on your dock to hold fish and then fillet them than it is to go in and increase your freezing capacity. We've added square footage to plants. We've invested in our NACNIC facility 3 consecutive years to increase production and floor space. That, in turn, hires local people and suppliers. So it's one that's worked all the way around, and we continue to increase our market share in the domestic market, which really has come at the expense of some of the customers that were purchasing farm salmon. Now that we have a high-quality, once-frozen fillet available, we've increased our market share dramatically. And so, you know, we think it's a program that's worked exactly the way it was intended. And, yes, if there's tweaks to it that we could make to improve it, we're all for that. But it's not just in Bristol Bay. We have 7 plants in Alaska. We've invested in fillet capacity and value-added capacity in 4 of them. In Kodiak Island, we've put in fillet pouch, skinless, boneless for pink salmon. And it's the diversity of those products that have allowed us to increase our canned salmon prices. It's allowed us to increase our frozen H&G prices, because back in the day, those were the only 2 forms that we had. And every year, you ended up overpacking in one or the other and depressing those markets. Now we have 2 and 3 new product options available to us. We can right-size our production to the market. And that's just continued to pay benefits in the market, not just to producers, but to fishermen as well. So I would have to say that, you know, the intention of a bill, often it doesn't execute the way everyone thinks it would, but this one has worked wonderfully. It's fostered investment in a lot of different areas for fishermen and processors alike. And, you know, we fully support the extension of this bill. We think it's critical, and it's going to continue to drive value for the state of Alaska and for fishermen as well.
Well, thank you, Mark. Any questions, comments from committee members? Not seeing any. Appreciate your time, Mark, and we'll look forward to continued conversation on the bill as it moves through the process here. I would like next to have Mary McDowell. Mary, are you, Tim, I guess we'll ask you if you wouldn't mind, we'll have you go back into the audience and have Mary come up, offer her comments, and we've got a limited amount of time here, so any brevity would be appreciated.
Okay, I will try to shorten my remarks. Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Mary McDowell. I'm Vice President of Pacific Seafood Processors Association, which is a trade association of seafood processing companies. Our member companies have salmon operations in 15 different communities around the state. I would certainly concur with the remarks of the previous speaker. Our companies have a lot of the same experiences. I guess the additional point I would like to make is that companies are struggling with the high cost of energy in rural Alaska, the areas where energy costs are very high, and yet the need for this kind of economic activity is also the greatest. We also have the worldwide economic recession, which impacts our customers with the credit crunch, people belt tightening, and their customers' customers, and of course this is all a challenge for the whole industry. Keeping our products desirable in the world markets, keeping up with evolving consumer demands and so on is critical. And at a time like this, when companies might be inclined to pull back a little bit on their investments, is exactly when we need to be making more of them to keep Alaska positioned so that as things improve in the world and so on, we have our place. I guess I would just add that as policymakers, you're in the midst of considering and debating how to use Alaska's revenues to position the state for the future. And I would see this extension as exactly the kind of investment opportunity that we should be looking at and supporting right now, that we know that Alaska needs to encourage economic diversification, to prepare for the future, ensure that our products are competitive in the world, and that we make the best possible use of our natural resources and add value here in the state and keep ourselves positioned. And this bill promotes and accelerates that kind of forward movement on all of those goals. And it is an investment that pays for itself many times over, that by investing in this equipment up front and positioning ourselves, this will improve things for the seafood industry, the coastal communities, and state revenues over time. So it's an excellent investment.
Thank you, Mary. Not seeing any questions. We will next go to Bob Waldrop. Are you online, Bob? Can you identify yourself and your affiliation, please, for the record?
Sir, my name is Bob Waldrop. I am the executive director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. That's an association of 1,850 Bristol Bay salmon drift net permit holders. These fishermen contribute 1% of their revenue to the Bristol Bay fishery in support of the state-defined purposes of the association. Those go to things like improving quality, marketing, scientific research, and development of infrastructure. We vigorously support 344. Its benefit to the fishery is evident and continuing. Many of the purposes are also ours, those of this association, and many of its effects directly benefit Bristol Bay fishermen. In response to the tax credit, value-added production in Bristol Bay is rising sharply. Filet production, recently thought to be nearly an impossibility in the Bay, has increased by over 18% just between 2008 and 2009 to a total of about 21 million pounds. Due to the tax credit, we expect to see this trend to continue. These filets and other value-added products are in high demand by markets around the world. Higher demand leads to higher wholesale prices and ultimately to higher revenues to fishermen. We've seen that in evidence. The opportunity to retool our plants and fisheries may soon be sharply reduced. We're in full production while farm salmon is in crisis from diseases in the past years. But their aquacultural bioengineers, they call farmers, are responding fast, and they expect to return to full production in the next 2 to 4 years. Their plight is our opportunity. While Chile pauses to rebuild, we need to complete our plant and equipment upgrades and be ready to compete with the expected flood of farmed salmon in 2013 and beyond. Investments in equipment upgrades made possible by the tax credit are investment in our long-term competitiveness, an investment which over time is likely to pay big dividends for the whole industry, and out of higher tax base or prices, repay the state for their assistance through this program. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Waldrop. Not seeing any questions or comments. It is the chair's intent, once again, to bring the bill back up probably as soon as next Tuesday, and I'd ask that the Department of Revenue, Tim, if you could be here for that hearing as well. We will keep public testimony open, and we hope to take additional public testimony, have some additional comments and questions from committee members. We're missing a couple today as well. So with that, not having more business coming before the committee will be adjourned at approximately 10:44.